Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Three Film Feature, where we look at three films that we are featuring. This time around, we're kind of going overseas for a bit as we look at Crippled Avengers, Goodbye, Dragon Inn, and then let's come back to American Shores, I guess, if you could say that, with Lars von Trier's Melancholia. Good times all around. Let's kick it. All right, this is an episode on the film Crippled Avengers. This is because I have been going through a lot of Shang-Chi's films recently. A lot of Shaw Brothers movies were just put on Mubi, and I'm like, I'm going to go through a lot of them. And I probably could have done a video talking about a lot of his movies. I watched Five Deadly Venoms, Five Element Ninjas. I watched a lot of other ones. But this is the last one I watched. I'm like, this is kind of interesting, and it encapsulates a lot of stuff that we could talk about. I haven't done a full-on, like, classic 70s era martial arts film yet. A couple years back, we talked about IP Man with Donnie Yen. That's, like, the closest we got. I really like that movie, and I really like this genre, and I do think it's not that it's, like, a lost genre to a younger era of film fanatics. It's just not one that people really go back to. So I just want to say, like, if you are a younger film fan and you're like, well, what are the classics I have to watch? I think if you watch a lot of, like, these classic 60s, 70s, and 80s martial arts films, the Bruce Lee stuff is easy to get into. If you want to go back to the Shang-Chi stuff, too, like I'm watching here, there is something to get from these because the story is so interesting and the action is always incredible. The action in these movies is always in focus with long takes. You are seeing the physicality of the performers at play here, and it looks incredible. And then the story is just so weird sometimes, because this is a really insane story, and I don't really know how much we're going to go into the weeds of it, because a lot of these films follow the same premise. Somebody is wronged, something happens to them in, like, normally like the first 15 to 20 minutes. Then the next part of the film is going to a temple or a manor somewhere. You're meeting somebody who is, like, the best of the craft, who's from, like, a rival, just like a rival to the bad guys, and we're going to study for years to come back and take our revenge or avenge something that happened to us or the people that were wronged or whatever. That's the premise of these movies. And then they just end. They end once we kill the bad guy and we don't even have a denouement. It's just like, we're just going to leave the temple now. Okay, we're done. That's the whole story of this movie, but the stuff in between here is truly interesting. So you have this powerful guy who, like, controls this town, and his son is attacked by, like, a rival clan. They're, like, called, like, the Tiger Three something, and they kill this guy's wife, and they cut off the arms of this guy's son. So what's his name? I'm sorry, I don't have the names memorized. It's like the Dao Tian Du or something like that is, like, the main bad guy's name. He's like, okay, well, I'm going to make my son really cool metal arms that can shoot shurikens out of them and can, like, stretch like he's a Masters of the Universe character. And he's going to train in Kung Fu, but with, like, these metal arms. And he's going to be the best that you've ever seen. So he trains his son. And then he's like, these are the descendants of the guys that killed your mom. Why don't you beat them up and show them how powerful you are? So his son does that. His son is Dao Chang, I think. And they do that. So now they're, like, the evil empire that, like, controls this town or this village or something. They're not the Crippled Avengers. The man who lost his arms is not the Crippled Avenger. It is four other men. The first one is this salesman who goes to this tavern. Chen Shun, I think is his name. Again, I really apologize with these names. It's kind of hard to memorize them, especially when we don't really say their names that much and we're just kind of, like, watching people on screen. But he's the salesman. He goes to this tavern. Another guy walks in this tavern. He's the blacksmith of this village. His name is Wei. And Wei is kind of, like, boisterous and loud. He's like, I don't really give a shit about the iron-armed man or his stupid dad. I'll fight them. I don't really care. And this action is dangerous, and it's kind of like, just shut up, dude, shut up, wait, don't tell anybody about that stuff. So that's going on. And then what happens is the son and the father just take out their anger and frustration of people making fun of them or like talking shit about them by crippling these people. So our salesman is blinded when the iron fingers go into his eyes and he can no longer see. And then our loud-mouthed blacksmith gets, like, he's like forced to drink like a specific type of potion or serum or whatever that makes him mute. And then we like break his eardrums so he's deaf. And you're like, okay, so we have two guys who are the crippled Avengers. They're going to come in. No, more happens. There's this another guy in the village. What is his name? I believe he is Huaki, something similar to that. Hugh or who. He like accidentally bumps into the sun and then Chang cuts off his legs. So he is picked up by the blacksmith and they are brought back to like the blacksmith area and they're like, this sucks. Like, what are we going to do? The one guy can't talk and he can't hear anything. The one guy's blind. The one guy can't walk. You're like, oh, so they're going to have to like use their disadvantages to beat them, right? Kind of. We have to build up to that because there's another guy, Wang Yi, who is like a special martial artist. He's like the best that you've ever seen. He's from the Eagle Mansion Temple, which is like a ways away. He finds that these guys were wronged by like the Tao that's like controlling the whole village. He's like, I'm going to go avenge you guys. I'll be the avenger for you crippled Avengers. So I'll go do that. So Wang goes into this temple. He gets pretty close to victory, but then he gets taken down and they put a weird device on his head that like breaks his brain or something. And now he has the mind of a child. So now he has to go back to Wei's blacksmith area. And you got these four guys who cannot do anything together. And now they have to. Their plan is, we'll go back to Eagle Mansion and we'll figure out how to train in martial arts and Kung Fu, and then we'll come back and we'll do this fight, and we'll take them down. That's the movie. And I'm like, that is just really cool. I really like the way we got these guys who are just perfectly fitted to this very specific thing. So our blind salesman, right, Shen, you have an actor who is very commanding and very stoic. Like, he can't be too loud or crazy. He has to just, like, have a presence. Our actor playing Wei, the deaf, mute blacksmith, he has to have very big facial expressions. We got an actor that does that. Our actor turned into a little baby kid boy. He's very outgoing. And all the movements have to be natural and easy flowing. He's really good at that. The choreography is so good. And our actor who is just legless, he's kind of got to be like the voice for everybody and that kind of stuff. I love all that. These guys are so good together. So they like get a wagon and we're going to just like bring everybody on the wagon. We're going to climb up. And then like the old Kung Fu master's like, it's really hard to be the best, but I promise all of you, I'm going to make sure you are the best. It's going to take some time, so the next 30 minutes of this movie are going to be you guys training in your specific ways. And it looks awesome. And that's the thing about these movies, is that it's less about the story and more about the acrobatics and actual martial arts that we can show you and have you do. So many of like the training sequences and the fight sequences just look so cool. They're so specialized. So our legless man, we built him iron legs. That's pretty sick. We love to see that. The best training part is definitely when Shen and Wang are like playing against each other with like the rings, because the rings are kind of like, you have to control the movement. You can hear every sound as you're moving it because you're blind, and they're bouncing off each other, just like climbing through the rings and stuff. And that like comes into play when they do like the fight at the end, because I think the fight at the end when it's Shen and Wang going against Chang using the rings, and it's just like 5 minutes of unbroken movements between these three guys bouncing off each other, moving around each other, having to make it look effortless. It's really cool, because that's the other thing. And I talk about this when we've talked about musicals and stuff. The thing with musicals is you have to make it look effortless. It's physical and it is demanding, but you can't make it look hard. That is the same with martial arts like this. When you have like a generic like brawler action flick where you have like an old man just beating up some people, you can make them look tired because that makes them like the everyman. But when you do Kung Fu, it has to look effortless. So when you're like holding up this ring that's strangling a guy's neck and then someone's jumping through and they're kicking it up in the air, flipping off their back to knock them back down again, you cannot screw that up. It has to look perfect. And it does. And the whole time, one of them has to look blind, one of them can't move their arms because they are stiff, and the other one has to do it like the joyful child. And it looks flawless every time. So they train for 3 years, and they become the masters of their craft. It's like listening to, using reflections to see everything around you, and just listening to like the specific noises of even like a leaf falling, and learning to use your legs as a weapon. So as that's going on, the Dao that's actually like controlling the city, he realizes something's coming up, and it's his birthday coming up. So this is going to happen on his birthday. So his brother, who's just like this tough big guy, is like, I have like an iron stomach, nobody can break me. So he's gonna like team up with a couple of the other people, because look, now there's four crippled Avengers coming to fight them. We have to have more than two villains: the father, the son, the uncle, and then like Master Wan, who is like second in command to like the Dao. So he's gonna show up too. And then we got Lin, and Lin is like this guy, he's got like a slingshot and he fires marbles. So we have to defeat him and that kind of stuff. And it's cool. And then it's just like our crippled Avengers, they got their plan. They're going to go back to the tavern. It's just going to be the blind salesman. So Chen is going to pretend he's like a fortune teller and he's actually going to be really smart. He's going to like defeat all these people that come for him. And the key thing is, we don't want the bad guys to know that we have a man with iron legs. So who's going to stay back? And he's not going to do a lot of the heavy fighting for like the middle section when we actually like defeat people. But he's going to get the finishing blows, because when the uncle comes in and he's like, all right, you guys are hassling my nephew and my brother, we're going to do this two ways, okay? I'm going to give you three kicks and three punches to knock me down. If you can't do it, I'm going to kill you. And then in comes Iron Legs, and he just stabs him with his iron leg, and his foot pierces into the guy's chest, and he's dead. And then they're like, oh shit, this is serious. Now the birthday festivities are ruined, and it just becomes a really cool brawl at the end of the film. There's not much story to this, but it is about just seeing the practicality of the way people move. And me explaining to you the fight sequences are not going to do them justice, because they are so specific in their movements, so specific in just like the nobility of a fight, like how you fight, how you do anything. Literally like flipping a table around to block things coming at you, just like embedding beads into people, and it's just so crazy and specific, and it looks awesome. And our good guys win at the end, and then it's just like, roll credits, nothing else. They won. Oh yeah, and Wang dies. The one who loses his brain to become like a child, he dies. We kill him. But I guess like he had to go. I don't know. I don't think he had to go. It's just kind of weird that that happened. Look, I love this type of movie. They're normally like 90 to 100 minutes long. You have really good restorations. Like all of these ones that I have watched, the remasters are fantastic and the colors are so vibrant. They look so specific and cool. The action is always enjoyable, and you just get something so cool from these guys committing to the specific bit. This guy can't bend his knees too much because his legs are made of iron. This guy can't scream or hear anything, so it's all in like the angry eyebrows. This kid is going to act like he's an acrobat jumping about all over the place when it's a grown man. It's really cool and specific, and you just get a sense that this is awesome. I love these types of movies, and they're so interesting. And this one, Crippled Avengers, it sounds ridiculous. And when it opens up, it does look ridiculous, but it just completely finds itself and you get enthralled with the story. It happens quick and fast and you love every second of the violence and chaos going on in this piece, and you just start to root for these guys throughout everything. It's really cool. So please watch some Shang-Chi films. They're really cool, and just check out Crippled Avengers. Goodbye, comma, Dragon Inn. Goodbye, Dragon Inn. That's right, folks. Man, what an episode we're doing this week. I don't know why I chose this one. It's a film that's been on my list for a while. Sometimes you just have like that file of like movies you know you want to watch, but you never have the time. Sporadically, I'll cross one off the list. This series gives me an excuse to do that. Such is the case with Ming Lang Tsai's film Goodbye, Dragon Inn. Now, Ming Lang Tsai, not a director I know too much about. He is a Malaysian-Taiwanese filmmaker who kind of came up in like the same era of some like the other big guys that did stuff there. I think Ong Lee's like a big like person of his generation. So, you know, that kind of stuff. He didn't really cross over to America that much. This might be the most well-known of his movies. I'm not too sure about that. It's interesting. This is a very interesting film. I do like it. I actually think it's a very interesting work. Like, this is the type of film that when a filmmaker says, I'm going to make this, you're like, oh, I'm interested in that. We've seen a lot of this type of movie. On this channel, we've talked about Cinema Paradiso, which is in a similar vein, which is kind of about, like, a movie theater and, like, watching movies and the experience of it. But this is more like a sad movie than that. That one's still sad. This is more sad in terms of, like, I don't know, just movies. They're not what they used to be, are they? So this movie is about a movie theater. It is a cinema that is closing, and it's playing its final movie, that is Dragon Inn. Now, Dragon Inn is actually a real movie. It is a 1967 Wuxia film, which is pretty interesting. Not one I've seen. I was like, should I do a companion piece and watch that movie? I don't think you need to watch that to get this. But they play clips from the actual movie. They primarily use dialogue from that movie as like the background noise for this movie. Actors who appear in Dragon Inn also appear in Goodbye Dragon Inn. They play themselves because this is about a theater that is closing in the final screening and the events that transpire in between those moments. A couple of things we should note right off the bat. This is a Taiwanese film. It is not in English. And it is a very specifically paced movie. It's 81 minutes long with credits. And still, I sit here and tell you that if your attention span cannot wait on those types of things, maybe this is not the one for you. And I hate to say that because, one, this movie is really short. And two, it's an interesting watch. But we hold on scenes for a long time. And if you are somebody who doesn't like that or can't handle that, where you're like, why are we spending 30 seconds watching this one thing? The camera's not even moving. The actors are barely moving. Why are we doing that? It could upset you. That doesn't bother me. I like a very atmospheric, like, sour kind of story about just the crumblings of a place, you know, like that's really interesting to me. So I can buy that and be a part of that. But even someone like me who takes the time to experience world cinema and wants to engross himself in this, there are moments where I am just like, I wonder why we spent the extra 6 to 7 seconds on this sequence. Would we lose anything taking those away? Or did we need to pad this just a little bit to get that runtime to the 80-minute mark so it's a real movie? I wonder. Because there is a lot of that. And that is not a criticism. Not a criticism. I understand the need to do that. It's about being in like this dour setting. Just everything's kind of like broken and not perfect. And people are just kind of like there. And they do that thing. And this movie's just about, like, how you experience a movie theater. And I love that kind of stuff. I love when a director talks about movies. And in particular, I love when a director talks about movie theaters. Like I said, we did Cinema Paradiso very recently. And that's just like, look at how much love and joy we have for this stuff. And this one is more like, movies aren't what they used to be. Everyone's kind of bitter on them. And no one's really enjoying themselves. It's like closing. It looks sad. There's just like old stuff hanging on the walls, cardboard cutouts that are taken down, just boxes upon boxes of just reels and whatever, just all over the place. Like nobody is enjoying themselves here, you know? You have two people that work there that we do follow a bit of their story. You have like, I guess the woman who works like the front counter, does all like the ticket sales and stuff. She's kind of got like a limp leg and she's also like the janitor and cleans up, just works like a generic job. And all of her sequences are just like watching this person go from room to room, clean it up a little bit, just experience stuff, eat some food, eat like a loaf of a bun or something, and just have that experience. And then you have the projectionist who just kind of like shows up, starts smoking. It's just kind of like, I like movies, but this isn't what movies are anymore. And it's so weird because you're just like, this is really sad and depressing. And we're watching, like, this woman walk down a hallway for a full 30 seconds, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm not feeling good after this. It is kind of a comedy. It lists itself as a comedy, I guess. There are jokes in it. Primarily, we follow, like, this young man who is kind of scouring the cinema for some action, quote-unquote. This is what I saw on the Wikipedia. He's looking for a homosexual experience. So he's kind of walking around trying to see, like, what he can get. Sometimes that's like watching a young couple eat a bunch of chicken inside the theater. It makes him upset. Sometimes when he sits too close to a certain man, he's trying to, like, move slightly to imply that. It's interesting at the least. And he is kind of where, like, the most comedy comes from, just, like, trying to walk around. People are in his way. He's using a urinal. It's, like, busy all around him. Dude can't be alone, and dude can't catch a break trying to score what he's after. And it leads to him, like, encountering, like, a random guy as they're smoking, and he gets kind of close, but the guy's like, you're reading into this wrong. And he's just kind of upset, and he runs back into the theater, and then, like, this girl is there, this pretty girl who's got her feet hanging off one of the chairs, and she drops her shoe, and she's like, I would be okay with this. And he runs away because he can't handle what she could be offering. So that's the movie. That's basically the movie. What I just said to you is basically the movie. Of course, it's more than that. It's just a loving homage to a cinema, which is really cool to see. The lights of the projection of just, like, what we're displaying, it's so cool to see that. And the red chairs all around, it looks like a nice old cinema. And then, like, towards the end, we're introduced to a couple of other characters. You have this old man who is there of his grandson. And then you have, like, this one more middle-aged to older actor, I will say, who's watching Dragon Inn, and he starts to cry. And then the end of the movie with those two, they confront each other because they know each other. Like, hey, did you like the movie? Yeah, I did. But, you know, nobody really goes to movies these days. And they're like, there's like 14 people maybe in this theater. No one's really doing anything. It's like an old building. And you realize that this man who was crying and this grandfather are real actors. They're playing themselves. The guy that plays the one actor, the guy that plays the one that was crying, is actually in the movie, Dragon Inn, and he's watching his performance. And I'm like, oh, man, that's crazy. I can't imagine being, like, a Taiwanese audience member. He's like, this guy's talking about how things are different now, and he's watching a movie about himself that he can't make anymore. And you're like, damn, that's sad. That's kind of crazy and weird. Very depressing, in a sense. It's very strange. But I kind of respect that. I respect a director that's just like, yeah, cinema's changing. The movies I liked, we don't make anymore. And it's just kind of sad to see the state of a movie theater just broken and decrepit and dreary. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. That is true. That is what is happening here. Long takes. And that is going to tire some people. I'm fine with it. I respect it so much for something like this happening. It is just watching people in a cinema. The movie's over. They leave. We clean up. We go home. There is some tenderness at the end where our woman leaves behind some food for the projectionist. And then they just go on with their lives as if this is it. And it's sad and kind of pleasant at the same time. Beautiful shots. The setups are always gorgeous because we have to make it look tight-knit and like we're in a movie theater the whole time. So it's really cool to see that. Just a movie that loves movies and respects cinema, but also says, hey, this is just the way things go sometimes. We can work all we want to try to be happy and pleasant, but things just end, and then you're forced to do something else. Goodbye, Dragon Inn. I was thinking about this too. Like, if this would be the equivalent, I'd imagine, of like if David Lowry said, I'm going to make a movie called Goodbye, Beetlejuice. That's what this would feel like, you know, like American terms today, you know? That's kind of funny. It's interesting. A very interesting movie. I say check it out. Like, there is something here that's very compelling if you can focus on it. We have this is a broad thing to say, but we have a generation that's not really good at, like, having a good attention span. So if you can't really hone in on this movie, I do get that. But when you do hone in, it's beautiful to look at. So today we're kind of stretching the boundaries of what I'm going to call a galactic tale in terms of the branding for this series. Galactic tale means science fiction movie. This one is technically a science fiction movie. Would you make that its like main category though? Is it more a drama? Is it more a horror movie? Is it more just like an existential series of dread that is creeping over a family? It's hard to say, but it's a science fiction film. That is what it's primarily labeled as, even though I would say it's hardly a science fiction film. We're talking Melancholia today. This is a early 2010s film from Lars von Trier, a director we have yet to talk about. One of the big ones that you could do an entire just like series or podcast talking about his aesthetic, his films, and what he does. The dude likes a specific vision, doesn't really conform to like the standards of what an American film should be, and just makes some crazy stuff. And Melancholia was one I kind of came to not really knowing what to expect. It's a name I'm very familiar with, but it's one of his works I'm not all that aware of. I know everything about Nymphomaniac, if that's what you want to know. That's what I know him for. But, you know, this one, I was like, okay, I could use like a dour experience of late. That'd be nice. We just came off of Goodbye Dragon Inn, so I could be in a bad mood. And this movie put me in a very bad mood. This movie fucking rocks. But is it dour and sad and going to leave you kind of just like empty inside, where you're like, I guess the meaning is to be happy and not to worry because it all could end? It's one of my favorite genres of film. And that is, what is the point of it? Question mark. What is the point of it? Just in terms of like, I don't know, should we worry? Should we feel? Should we care? Are we happy? What is the point of being happy? Are we content in our lives, in ourselves, in the world around us? It's just, I love that vibe. And this movie does a great job exploring that through two sisters who have two completely different reactions to the world around them. You first have Kirsten Dunst's character, who kind of like leads the first half of this movie. It's her wedding night. Her and her groom are late pulling up to the event. So it is the home, which is also like a huge golf course that is owned by her sister and her brother-in-law. And she's getting married to Alexander Skarsgård. They're kind of running late because their limo can't turn around on the tight road. And you, as the story progresses, you get the sense that Justine doesn't want to get married, or that she doesn't want this type of attention around her, or this feeling that comes with having to put on the show. Her character, it's very clear what she's going through, which is a bout of depression. And it's a really well-handled opening act, which is like the first hour of the film is dedicated to this wedding night. And you see a lot of the sides of the conversation. You get a sense that this girl's willing to put on the show, but first she wants to, like, you know, say hi to her horse and like take the time to show up, not really considering all the guests that are in, like, they're waiting for her and stuff like that. It's really beautiful. You know, it's this really beautiful, quiet thing of just a person who has to pretend, when this should be like one of the happiest days of their life, they have to pretend that they're doing okay. I love the way the world around her reacts to everything she does. This is one of Kirsten's best performances. I love Kirsten Dunst. I love her so much. I think she is slowly becoming a name I'm always going to watch out for, because she has never put in a bad performance. I just never give her the caliber of being like a top actress for me, but I think I should, because she's incredible. And this performance is so destructive in like these very intimate and slow revealing ways, where every smile that fades feels so real. Every quiet step she takes feels so real. She doesn't truly apologize for her actions, which I think is interesting. One of the smartest things that this film does is not have Justine apologize for her behavior, because she doesn't think she's doing anything wrong. And I don't want to get into like the topics of depression and all that. I would just say if you are having issues, you know, seek out help. There are definitely ways to go about that. But I just think this film handles it with a really interesting brevity that is very earnest. She sees the people around her that she's comfortable talking to, her soon-to-be husband, her sister, where they'll pull her aside and just be like, Can you please get through this? I know you are being difficult right now, and I know you're aware of that. I just need you to get through this moment so we can cut the cake, so we can send people home, so we can do like the thing we were supposed to do 2 hours ago. And you just slowly love the reveal of that. She's clearly more comfortable around like her father and her sister. And you get like a sense that she is kind of like not truly supported by her family side of her going into this marriage. Her parents are split up. Her mother, played by Charlotte Rampling, a favorite on this channel of Movie Tales, she's kind of just like, well, I don't believe in love, and I kind of just like got unlucky with your father and everything's bad. I'm not going to tell you to get married. And her father's like, I don't know what I can do to help you. Her sister is more comfortable putting up with it, and her soon-to-be husband wants her to be happy. And he's willing to make the moments. Like, I bought us a vineyard. Like, we can go to a nice place and settle down and be happy here. And it's really cool. I love all of the performances. I think Skarsgård, both of them, are really good in, like, their collective moments. Whereas Alexander is more just like, I am comfortable taking the time. I like to be happy. I want to make you happy, but you got to give me more than I am giving you. You know, he's somebody who is needy enough to want the attention that he's giving her, but is not being reciprocated. And you love to see that. And Stellan is this guy who wants to use her as well, but in a different way for his like marketing campaigns and stuff. And he literally sends like a spy to the wedding to get information from her. And the entire time it's just Dunst giving this incredible performance. She's giving this performance where she only has true, genuine moments of happiness when she is away from the people in her life. When she is with her horse, she feels happy. And then when she is with her nephew, who wants to play with her, she feels happy. But everything else is a lie. Halfway through the wedding, she just goes to have a bath, so everyone has to wait for her. And they're just like, whatever. And Kiefer Sutherland, man! Oh my goodness! One of my favorite Kiefer Sutherland performances I've seen in a while, because this is just a guy who's like, I don't know. Everything kind of sucks. She's really making me mad! I mean, it's my vineyard, it's my golf course, I'm doing all this crap for her. Getting really pissed about it. It's really annoying. It's kind of bothering me. But slowly they get through the wedding, kind of. She literally has sex with another man, which causes Skarsgård to leave her at the night of their wedding, which sends her deeper into depression, and then she quits her job because she's no longer happy in it. That's the first half of the movie. It's beautiful wedding stuff. It's actors committed. It's Dunst at her best. And it's Lars von Trier just doing some very intense camera work in like a documentary footage, a lot of zoom-ins, a lot of close-ups on faces, just making you stay with these people and the discomfort that's coming around from this unattentive bride. It's really powerful and cool and very emotional. I'd love every second of that. The camera work is so beautiful. And then the second half of this film focuses on Claire. She is the sister, Charlotte's Gainsbourg. She is a regular who will go on to do more stuff with von Trier. And she's great. And where her sister kind of like suffered from a serious bout of depression, she is very anxious. So every moment where something happens, she is anxious. And why is she anxious? Primarily because this is a Galactic Tales film, after all. A planet is about to crash into Earth. There are reports like on, you know, Reddit posts and whatever, that a big planet called Melancholia is going to crash into Earth in a couple days. Now, her husband, played by Kiefer Sutherland, he believes that scientists are all right and it's going to pass by. So he's trying to convince his wife, who is very anxious, you're going to be okay, it's going to pass. But the entire time, she is worried that she's going to die. And how could you not? If there is a possibility that a planet is headed straight towards Earth and could crush us and kill us all, you're not going to feel comfortable in any situation ever again, because what is the point of it all? And that becomes the drive, and that becomes the driving force. You're just like, yeah, we're all going to die. What is the point of anything going on? This sucks. I'm happy to just die. Kirsten, she is no longer in her marriage. She is stuck in depression. She can barely get out of her house. They have to call her on the phone just to try to get her to come to their estate to live there with them. It takes her too long to get out. And the entire time, she's in the background just kind of moping about, not saying much, not eating much, not taking a bath, just being there, stuck in her depression, just being like, I hope we just all fucking die. I don't care. You gotta stop trying to change me and fix this and just understand that there's no point to any of it. Very bleak, very earnest at the same time. I kind of respect it for that. And as the story progresses, we just see Kiefer Sutherland oblivious to the problems going on with the women in his household. And he's like, I gotta see this planet, man. I gotta see this planet. His sister-in-law is severely depressed and is not taking care of herself. His wife is breaking down, taking pills, literally planning to kill her entire family so they don't have to like be blown up by a planet. And he's just like, I got the perfect telescope. I got resources for when the power goes out. Everything's gonna be fine for us here. Terrifyingly oblivious guy who gets killed in the movie, not by the planet, because a horse kicks him and he dies. And his wife's just like, I cannot deal with this right now. I can't deal with that. And that is, this is where like the most science fiction comes into it of it all. You have this depressed woman, you have an anxious woman. A planet is literally orbiting the Earth. You can see it in the sky. It is getting bigger and coming closer. Her son builds a device so she can, like, see if it's coming closer or farther away. And now they have to, like, pretend they're okay with everything when they're not. Kirsten Dunst is just like, if we're gonna die, we're gonna die. I don't really have anything else to say. That's just, you know, way of the world. And you have the sister, Claire, who is just, we're gonna get through this, I gotta be okay, literally trying to like run away from everything with her son to make it better, but she just like can't do it, so she has to come back home where her sister's just like, you know, them's the breaks, kid. It's very bleak in that setting, and that's gonna be off-putting to a lot of people, but I love that setting so much. I really appreciate that. It's gonna sound really ridiculous me saying this, but I definitely get like the relationship between the sisters, because that's kind of me and my sister. If there was an end of the world scenario and a planet was coming down ready to crush Earth, my sister would be the one to panic and I'd be the one to say, we can't do shit about that. She'd be the one running into like the golf course trying to flee, and I'd just be like sitting on the, you know, edge of our steps just being like, So I really got that relationship. I dig it. It's so interesting. And just the fast-paced energy of the camera work, just like the beautiful vineyard and courses we're setting everything on, the greens and the blues really pop. There's a beautiful moment where like Claire sees her sister Justine like bathing in like the light of melancholia, and it's just like this beautiful presentation of Dunst just like laying down surrounded by like this blue aura just staring up at the sky, and it's just gorgeously made. It just looks so incredible. I really think that is such a cool vibe to show for this movie. Fun's the wrong word. I had fun with the movie, but I wouldn't say it's a fun movie. It's really interesting, though. And how does it end? Well, everyone dies because the melancholia hits Earth and everything's exploded. And you see Dunst kind of steps up, take care of her sister, who wants to just, like, pop pills and kill everybody. It's like, can we just, like, relax and be with each other before we die? Can you stop worrying about everything? Then they die. And it's... It should be more tragic than it is, but it's not that tragic. You're just like, this is going to happen. It's kind of just like a metaphor for life. Like, you can't avoid the thing that's going to hurt you or break you or ruin you. Eventually, you're just going to get hit by it and you have to deal with that, which is kind of an interesting metaphor. It doesn't necessarily work when we're talking about people who have anxiety problems and depression issues. But I think the way it's handled is with a lot of brevity and heart, and it's never like talking down about these issues. It's presenting them as real and nuanced and showing you that it can change from a moment to moment basis. But the overarching element that controls you and drives you is going to lead you to your ultimate end. And that's fine, I guess. I say this. They're really good fucking performances. Like, both of the sisters, Justine and Claire, Kirsten Dunst and Charlotte Gainsbourg. It's fucking awesome. They are so good in this movie. Just two people accepting their fates and trying to avoid them at different costs. But a very intense wedding to start us off. A big planet coming to crash Earth. Everyone is miserable and dreading the point of existence. Kiefer Sutherland just so in love with, like, a telescope. That's a good fucking movie. And melancholia kind of rocks. Because what is the point of it all, really? So that is going to do it for Galactic Tales. Because it is one. Be sure to like and subscribe to the channel. As always, you can check me out on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. And of course, I will catch you in the next one. Have fun. Stay safe. Good luck.